referee. He's reaching in his pocket. What's that going to be? Oh, Schaffelberg goes down. It's a red card. And that can mean only one thing. It's time for the Get Off My Pitch podcast. My name is Eric Paisley. With me tonight is...
John Brennig.
Should have been six. It could have been six. You got off lucky. It could have been six. How you doing tonight, John?
I've been doing well, man. It's been a good weekend despite lots of rain. But, yeah, you know, that Friday night soccer game was a great way to kick it off.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the latest Leagues Cup match, Nashville versus Minnesota, the Loons. We'll be telling you who is the hardest working player on that match, who is the MVP, and which one of the five goals was our favorite. We'll also be telling you about some stats coming up. We'll be talking about the upcoming matches. And John will be telling you who or what needs to get off our pitch because I am serving a red card suspension. So buckle up. It's going to be a good episode. All right, John. Gut reaction to the match. What did you think of this 5-0 victory?
I'll do two gut reactions. One, okay, it's really cool when the red cards don't go against us.
Right.
Like, holy cow. But the second thought is, we did a good job of playing like a playoff game. Mm-hmm. You and I have seen us go up a man and piddle around. I think it was in a road game or two, and not win and not score, win one. Like, we put it to bed. We were decisive. Mm-hmm. It was great to see them treat it like a playoff game where we went up a man. It was pretty close before then, and we'll probably talk about that more. But once we got up, we pushed forward. We got one. We got two. We continued to push. We didn't let off the gas. We subbed in Sam, which I know in Gary's mind was probably about, we want Sam to play a full 45 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, we want him to get playing time to get up to speed. He was probably right. Going to play 45 minutes no matter what the game script called for. I can almost guarantee. However, we still played him even though we were up, and we still let him go. You know what I mean? And he scored. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was the fact that that felt nice, but the gut reaction was we played well and we played like it meant something and something was on the line and it felt good. We didn't just give up after the first goal or park the bus. We kept pressing and, you know, made a, what I would say is an impressive win, you know, all things considered.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I was there at the match. My daughter and I went. She and I were taking advantage of the good weather. It was a beautiful night. Beautiful night. We set up in section 218. So we actually sat above where our seats are, right on the front row, right on the very front row of the second. And I got to tell you, that is a primo spot. I can say, so Clay Trainum, shout out to the Pharma podcast. So Clay's is in 215. So he's over section 205. He's over the supporters on the right-hand side. And I really like, so I sit over there during the Atlanta match when I took the family, and I really liked that second level. Sitting dead center on that second level, John, I got to tell you, it was like a whole nother game. Now, obviously, the corners, the near side corners were kind of hard to see, but you had such a TV view of the match. It was like, you know, a super high def television, you know, and I got to tell you, it was fun to watch the boys move the ball so brightly. The first 30 mm-hmm. minutes were kind of tactical. You know, Pookie had a pretty good shot on goal that probably should have been on frame. But I could tell that we were not going to abandon, like you just said, we weren't going to abandon the press. We didn't surrender a lot of possession. We really, and maybe we'll talk about this during the stats section, but I don't think we surrendered a lot of possession, even in the first half when we were playing a little more cagey. And as the game went on, the game, you know, funneling it to Shaq and Schaffelberg, moving it quickly up the pitch and getting it to our forwards was just really just, we just kept hammering it time after time after time. And I got to tell you, Schaffelberg was being a little pest out there. He was being an absolute little pest. He was jawing. He was beating guys off the ball. It was clear what his game plan was. And I don't know. I liked the energy. I liked the five goals. It was an incredible match to attend.
Mm-hmm.
All right, John, who was the hardest working player for you?
So these were kind of hard sifting through. Like, I mean, there was so many things to choose from, you know what I mean? Like we talked about, we have five goals to choose from for our favorite goal segment. This is going to be good. I guess it came down to two people. One of them was kind of the silent person that no one really saw and talked about. And one of them was Schaffelberg, who you saw front and forward. So to me, kind of the silent warrior in this whole thing was Brian Enunwa, who I know is much maligned in NSC circles. And I totally understand that. He has some duds of games. He's had some dumb fouls. This game, he didn't have any fouls, did anything. But to me, the thing that stood out is if you looked at his individual stats,
yeah, just bring up Brian Enunwa to Newton Domini just on a casual, just buy him a beer and bring up Brian to you'll hear an earful.
Yeah. But again, he had a couple tackles, one, he had some recoveries. To me, in this game in particular, I noticed while we were full 11 on 11, he pressed forward with the rest of the team, but on defense, he seemed like he was trying to kind of shadow Reynoso, which makes sense because he's their most dangerous player. Obviously, Pukki's the scorer and the finisher, but Reynoso's the man that makes it work. He's their version of Hani, doing the same thing, doing the number 10 stuff, setting up goals. I felt like he was kind of there to shadow it, and he did that. He basically did a lot of the dirty work that enabled Dax to do the Dax things in this game that we all saw, you know what I mean? So to me, Brian was kind of the silent warrior behind the scenes and could win MVP argument, but to me, you know, Schaffelberg was just so clear doing his stuff. He earned the red card. He got, you know, an assist. But, I mean, he was a terror. You saw him. He was going at their players. He was trolling them, and it was beautiful. He was being petty and going for it, but he did it well. Like we talked about before, we had some recent troubles with some attitude on the pitch and reacting to things. He didn't do that. He got up. He did it all within the realm of, you know, the limits of not getting in trouble, not getting extra fouls on him. He did what he needed to do, and he terrorized them, and it was beautiful, and he was the hardest working, and only because of other stats and the way things happen, I don't think I could give him MVP, but he was kind of close to it. But it came because of the efforts of Jacob going forward, running down, getting crosses, trying to get out. And you saw him, he was working. They tried to cover him, and he was having to juke left and right. Like, it wasn't just run down and get a cross. There were a couple times he had to really work to get the crosses off and to get it in there. So it's not that, you know, it wasn't a simple effort. It's not like they were just letting him run rampant. They were trying to stop him on that left-hand side.
Yeah, for me, it was Shaq Moore, and I think it's also a bit of a consolation for, you know, his hard work, getting a goal.
Getting the goal finally. Yep.
Yeah, getting the goal, getting that goal off of a rebound, you know, it off of a missed hit. It all came together for me in this match, and he just put it such a wire-to-wire, and again, since he was on my side of the field, it was a little easier to tell, but the wire-to-wire performance that Shaq put in was rewarded with a goal, and it should have been, and I'm really, really glad.
And you can tell, I don't know if you listened to the interview with Hani, they talked about when, you know, Gary wanted Hani to come off, and Hani said, no, I'm going to stay on, and Shaq said, oh, hey, I'll come off, because, I mean, the man does work hard. But that's the thing is, you saw at the end of the game, Hani just kind of floated out there because we didn't need him to defend, but Shaq was still working and coming back, and so Shaq was like, yes, I'll take a rest, and I think he deserved it because he worked hard. So I feel you on that one.
And I, you know, we got to play Tuesday late, and so we need all hands on deck. And so, yeah, I just wanted to give it to Shaq. Schaffelberg, obviously. My daughter really liked Anunga's play. She really liked Brian's play because he just really showed more quality in this match. And she pointed that out a couple of different times that, you know, he was a key player in dispossessing the ball and in keeping the ball, which is a different game for him. You know, normally he's very aggressive, overly so sometimes. And he just showed a real quality in this match, and I think that he's trying to make a case. You know, he's trying to make a case to get on the field more, and, you know, good for him. Mm-hmm. Good for him. All right, let's. Oh, this is a tough one. We got to pick an MVP. Who is going to be the most valuable player for you?
Well, there's a guy that like assisted on some goals and scored some things. I don't know his name. So Hani Mukhtar. You might have heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Hani did Hani things. I think this is nice to give him MVP, not because the stat sheet said it. He finally got on the scoreboard. He finally looked like he was doing Hani things out there. Sure, some of it was against 10 men, but my favorite thing is there was a quote from Adrian Heath afterwards where he said, yes, we were down, but we still defended poorly. You know what I mean? He was still mad at the effort they put up because they said, remember, they subbed off Fragnape and put on Valentin as a defender because he wanted to still have four in the back. And he is like, we still defended poorly.
They were terrible.
We did not do well. Hani tore them up. So it was just good to see him go back to that and have some swagger. Because I think, again, we talk about we needed to get back to that. We needed to get the vibe going. We need to feel good. We need to get people on the score sheet and all, you know, all that kind of good stuff of just building the momentum and restoring what was lost through those, that, you know, horrible 5-game stretch at the end of the break before MLS. So I think, you know, he deserved it. The stats say it, but I think to me, hopefully that gets him in the right place where he can keep that going and stay, you know, as sharp and as, you know, with his attack.
We were talking about Mayer's redemption arc. And I think, Honey missed a sitter on that first real attempt we had on the real first opportunity we had. Got, he missed it. He just shanked a shot on the right. And I think that ate away at him the whole match. Mm-hmm. I think he's very competitive. Like the best players are very competitive. Hani Mukhtar is incredibly competitive. And yeah. I can see that sort of gnawing at him. And so that goal that he roofed that goal, a little venom in that shot. It was a little bit of a venom.
I think I texted you, maybe with someone else, that I was like, that was harder than the one he missed.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, yeah. Okay, you score the harder one, Hani. Go ahead and show off a little bit. But no, I think it shows that he needed to get back out there and get the confidence, you know what I mean? Just get the good vibes flowing. So I think that was key.
All right. Now for the main category. Favorite goal.
Alex almost won, but he scored with a normal body part, so that's not fun. I need something exotic from
Alex. I told my daughter the whole man boob story. She looked at me. She was like embarrassed. She was incredibly embarrassed. Incredibly embarrassed. I'm like, I'm sorry, but if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you would know that John tries to work Alec Mule's man boob into every single episode. So not my fault.
Yeah, well, it didn't work this time. Though he did try that one header. We went over the guy and knew he was going to foul, so he tried to back off and almost stomached the ball. I don't know. Alex is going to Alex, man. I'm going to give it to the Shaq goal. I think it was beautiful because Shaq was in the right place at the right time. Like, that's one of those, you know, poacher striker goal you usually see happening, kind of like Teal's was. You know, the ball bounced around. Hani touched it. Teal finally put the right touch, which I also think was good to get him off the schneid. But I feel like Shaq's, because he came out of nowhere, he made the run and committed all the way into the box, into the 6-yard box to finish it, which is
rare. It was
rare.
A poacher's goal. Yeah, I had this. It's funny.
Because he's not there usually. He doesn't show up in that spot. No. I don't know why he saw that run or what he thought, but it was perfect.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if that was a game plan or it's just he saw something and went for it. But yeah, I actually wrote it down too. I thought Shaq had the best match. Overall had the best game. Mm-hmm. He had the best game. And I think I've already talked about this and I've already gone on record. Shaq Moore is just a good soccer player. He's just a good soccer player. He is so valuable for this team. Just as a well-rounded, all-around, reliable, good soccer player. He brings the quality of the league up being on the field. And, I mean, that's all I got to say. So, yes, Shaq's obviously – Sam Surridge's goal. That's two. I'll talk a little bit about the next. You know what? Let's take a break. I'll talk a little bit about that. I know we don't really talk about EPL, but I do want to talk a little bit about that. So when we come back, we will talk about what we learned from this match. John will hit us with some stats. John will share what the official get off my pitches will be. And you want to stick around. So stay with us. And we're back. John, I got to tell you, when I arrived at the stadium at 6 o'clock, I was looking forward to one thing. Do you know what that one thing was?
Buying a Tempo plushie.
Buying a Tempo taco. But you know what I couldn't? Do you know what I couldn't do?
What?
Was buy a Tempo taco. They were not there. They were not there Friday nights. Instead, it was just a regular beer stand, and I was mostly disappointed. I panicked, but I did find out that they were just not there for the regular weekday games. For some reason, there's some rules around Leagues Cup. They don't have certain vendors. They didn't have certain – so I panicked, but we're okay. They will be back for the regular MLS season. But I don't think for the Leagues Cup games they will be available. Hmm. But I instead had something else. It wasn't as great a quality because Tempo Tacos, the best thing at the stadium. Check them out at Section 118. They are not a sponsor of the podcast, but I wish they were. All right, John. What did we learn from this match? What did you learn from this match? We've already kind of touched on it, but what else did we want to dive a little deeper into that?
Yeah. I think we learned that the Daxasance is real. Mm. And before we continue, I would like to say that I have proof, Discord timestamps, talking about in this game chat that I used the word Daxasance on Friday night in the conversation. And I say that because Chris Ivey tweeted out about an hour ago about Dax and the Daxasance. So I just want to mention that I used the term first. I am not stealing from Chris. However, I am flattered that he used the same term I did. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'd both seen it before because I think it was thrown around before when another time Dax had a run of good games. And so I'm flattered that he is on the same wavelength. But I just want to cover my butt there. But no, like the beautiful long balls that he was launching, this is one of the things. I was not going to nominate the Sam Surge as my favorite goal because it was the exact same goal as the other game. Yeah. Instead of Dax launching it to Hani, it happened to be Schaffelberg. And then and instead of a header, it was kind of a low kick in from Surge. It was the same goal.
It's a striker's goal.
Right, but the setup was the same. Dax was on our side of midfield, mm-hmm. a little bit on the right-hand side, cleared it over to Jacob, who was on a run. Surge came in. He crossed it. Surge nailed. It was the same blueprint. Now, here's the great thing. It worked again. It was slightly different, but it still worked in a different way. But it was the same beautiful pass from Dax. Like, when his passes like that, those long passes are working, it's great. He also got that beautiful assist on the Hani goal, you know, where he had his kind of back to goal and did the heel flick on, which again, I can't wait to hear the
everybody
Major League
went,
Journeyman podcast.
Everyone in the stadium went, oh, it was amazing.
And I can't wait to hear what he has to say about that on the Major League Journaling podcast. Because you remember the last time he had the crazy assist, they talked about it and you know, gave him a little bit of a hard time because that's not his typical skill set. But he was just doing the Dax things where he's making key passes, you know what I mean? But to me, we need him to play like that if we're going to unlock great teams. I think Monterrey is going to be a key team for that. We'll see who we face after that. And I don't know that we're not always going to need it against some MLS teams, but I think in order for our counters to work, him being able to complete and play those passes well and break the lines and push things forward, even if Schaffelberg then takes that pass, the one that we scored on, doesn't get a goal, backs out and drives up, all of a sudden everyone else is pushed up and now we're all around their 18-yard box. Now we're in the last third. You know what I mean? We're attacking. Right. Even if we don't get goals directly off that, the fact that it keys and moves everything up and completely shifts the field towards the attacking end, that's huge for us. And again, I think that's why it complements so well with Godoy's skill set, which is to dribble it up in the middle, to do some nice passing and to kind of, you know, shimmy his way through the field and get the ball up there in another way. It gives us two distinct ways of getting into the attacking third. And I feel like it was on perfect display in this game.
Yeah, so that's what you saw Brian keying into that role a little bit towards the end. When he started, he was definitely back to the goal, back to goal, kicking it back to the defense. But he actually started, as the game progressed, maybe gaining confidence, started to change his game to where he was in possession more and pulling the ball into the middle of the field and up, kind of like Godoy. So if he wants to emulate Godoy, hey, I'm all for that.
You know, if he likes to draw a couple more fouls a game, that would be nice. I think it said he drew one, which, okay. But, you know, if he wants to up that, that's a good tally too.
I think that my daughter pointed out that Dax is number six, and she says that's the level of anger he comes in on. He comes in on the field at a six, like out of 10. Like, he comes in at a six. Like, he comes off a little pissed off. And, you know, so there might be something to that too. I think we learned that, Minnesota, they really, I got to admit, I have a little bit of a mixed emotions about the win because Minnesota really played very poorly. They played very, very poorly.
Yeah.
That takes away a little bit of the shine off the win a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because I kind of wanted that. Pookie seemed to be the only player on Minnesota's side that had sort of that Hani Mukhtar sort of like, hey guys, let's get going, let's get some defense going, let's do something here instead of just sitting defending. But it just seemed like his teammates were just not having it. I think they were tired, they wanted to go home. And I think one of the things we learned is, and Gary pointed this out, and not this interview but the last, is that this tournament is a bit an advantage for the MLS side because his players have been home. They've been able to rest with their families and their friends, and it's very different trying to be on the road, living out of a hotel, and it's just a different mentality, and it really wears you down. And I think that Minnesota, especially since they barely escaped that Toluca game, a little bit lucky after the ending there. I think we're just kind of gassed. I think they were just sort of mentally and physically exhausted coming into Nashville, playing in it was a nice crowd. It was loud, and I don't know. It was a very hostile environment to play in as an opposing side. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things I learned from the match is that, but we beat a bad team. Like we took care of a team that was playing poorly, but we didn't like play down to that level. So
right, and again, we not only took care of a team that was playing poorly, that was down, but again, I agree, we did the job. We have a tendency to get lackadaisical and not put forth that effort. Maybe it's because it's a tournament; they're more motivated. It's not a Wednesday trip to, you know, New England in February where it's kind of cold. But yeah, I agree. It was reassuring to see that. You know, and also I would like to point out, and I feel like a lot of people have forgotten, we have been playing for 2 weeks now without Randall Leal, who's still injured and on his way back. Hmm. He's probably won't be available for these two games. I'm not saying he will. He might be available for the first game we play back, which is not New England anymore, and we'll talk about that in the next segment. But I'm just saying, we're playing without one of our kind of key depth pieces in some of these areas, and we're playing well. So we've talked about we're rounding the form, doing all this stuff. It's nice to see that we're succeeding. I would love for him to come back and have a couple of the good games that he had before. Mm. But I just want to put out things we're learning. We're doing a lot of this working. Sean Davis didn't have to come onto the field, so we rested and stuff.
Godoy didn't have to come on the field.
Well, I mean, he did, but only for... he put in kind of a token effort. But I'm just saying, it was nice to see us succeed without some players having to see time and do that again because we played so well and put the game away early. It's, you know, I agree because we talk about, and I think Clay Trainum has said a few times on Twitter that we have a tendency to score late goals, especially late winners are tying it up, which is fine. But, you know, if you put away a game early like this and you go up, you know, 3-0, 4-0 by the 53rd minute, you can kind of coast, and that's a cool thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, how about hit us with some stats to back up that claim?
Mm. Well, so here's one that I like in particular. According to the stats I'm looking at, we completed 28 long balls, but the man of the hour, Dax McCarty, 7-for-7, perfect on those long balls, accurate long balls. So the man was completing long passes, which is what we talked about, what we like, what we see, what we want to do. And I mentioned, you know, Anungwa out here, he won, you know, a little over 50% of his ground duels. He's drew a couple fouls, 7 recoveries. So again, key, and by the way, 0 times dispossessed, which usually our midfielders aren't always dispossessed. It depends on how hard they press us, but it was nice to see he kept the ball. He did the little things we talked about. So I feel like that was kind of key. And then, you know, there was that kind of 3 assist thing for Hani. I will say this. It's kind of a bummer it wasn't a PK because I had been tracking Schaffelberg's shadow goals of, you know, goals that came off PKs for that. Yeah. So while he did draw the red card, which was key, he did not increase his shadow goal total for the year, which was already at 3 goals that were scored on penalties directly that he drew. So it was important what he did, but he didn't necessarily get credit for that in this game.
Well, let's break in here. And who do you think sees the pitch starting on Tuesday?
I wouldn't be surprised if we went with the same lineup, except we go ahead and start Godoy. I think we start Godoy over Nungwa, but it may depend. I could see a chance that Surridge starts, but I'm not entirely sure, and I wouldn't bank on it. Because we talk about Anungwa. When I saw Anungwa and Teal out there, I said, okay, Gary's going to go for the first 45. We're going to try, but we're going to play kind of cagey, and then we're going to go for it in the second half, which is when Sam came on. I wouldn't necessarily be surprised to see the same strategy. Like I said, maybe with Godoy and then Teal still out there. And then the second 45 is with that. Obviously, by the way, one thing I realize we haven't talked about is the Joe absence, which was evidently he had to travel for a family thing. So our wishes are with him if that was anything bad. So I would assume Joe would be back in goal if whatever that is passed. But maybe we do see Panico start. But it's just another roster inconsistency we didn't address.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see a difference. I mean, I can only really recall Panico making one key save.
He didn't have to do much work
off of Pookie. Yeah, he did have to make a pretty good save off Pookie. So
yes,
and apparently also off the ball, Pookie and Hani are actually fairly friendly. So they
played together for a couple of years at Brondby, I believe.
Yeah,
that's why people had talked about possibly Pookie being a target for us because they had that relationship.
Yeah, but they talked quite a bit before the game. So I'm always keen on seeing those relationships. Well, since I'm serving a red card suspension, I'm going to turn over the next segment to you, John. Why don't you tell the folks who or what needs to get off your pitch?
This red card goes to almost everyone that I've talked to soccer about with, including myself, because...
Okay. Wow.
No, okay. Because we're all lazy and not up with the terminology. We keep talking about qualifying for the CONCACAF Champions League. Mm-hmm. It is not called that anymore. The 2023 year was the last time it was called that. It is now called the CONCACAF Champions Cup, which... technically, it was from 1962 to 2008. I'm reading the Wikipedia page. I don't have this memorized. I will tell you that. But then they changed it to CONCACAF's Champions League from 2008 to 2023, which, you know, sounds like that. Whatever branding, whatever reason, again, starting this next year, the thing that we are qualifying and talking about the spots of, you know, winning the League's Cups, get you qualifications, all that stuff, is for the CONCACAF's Champions Cup. So... all of us have seen, I've even seen some of the Nashville media, like Ben Wright and stuff, people call it that. I've seen people on the Discord. I've talked to people. You've done it. I've done it. It's CONCACAF Champions Cup. Let's start using it correctly because that's what we want to play in. The Triple C. Yeah, the CCC. I don't know. Somehow the repetitive abbreviation makes it sound worse.
Clay and I had an interesting conversation about this the last time he and I connected. Do we actually want to qualify for the Triple C?
Ooh.
Do we want to play in
this?
Okay, so
my red card aside, yep, put a bow on it. That's my red card. Get off my pitch. In my honest opinion, I think we need one more year to be ready. In other words, I would like to be in the 2025 version because our academy just started. I feel like we still have a lot of weakness on our bench. Zubac. Now, Sipic's going to be in that position next year. Sipic's played. He had some highlights in the Huntsville game this past week.
He did.
And again, for the folks at home, just to
remind everyone,
Adam Sipic is the academy player. So he's from our academy.
Sorry about that.
So Sipic is our academy player who was signed to Nashville, the primary roster, and will play for us next year, but plays in the academy, but also sometimes plays in Huntsville. But anyway, I was saying, I just feel like we don't have necessarily the same key depth we need to make that run. You saw what happened with LAFC where they kind of petered out in the middle of the season. They came back hot at the beginning of the League's Cup because they had time to rest. It's a lot of games. It clogs the schedule. It would be fun. There's money in it. There's prestige. I just don't know that we necessarily have the depth. I feel like another season of developing and filling in some of these, upgrading from Anungwa to someone else, upgrading from Zubac to someone a little bit better, you know, maybe making a few upgrades in some of those places would really round it out. I mean, the only place I'm really confident in is our center backs. We've got depth there, but like behind Lovitz, we don't really have a great backup. Washington's good, but not defensive. So anyway, yeah, I don't know that we're ready. I think in a year we might be, but you know what? Maybe we will be next year. So we'll see.
I think Clay's – I don't want to speak for Clay. I would never do that.
No.
I think his point from what I recall was that you look at how it drained Seattle. I mean, they were they reentered regular MLS play just terrible. I think it took such a toll physically and maybe mentally to sustain that schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very difficult. So – I think that I'll combine what he said with what you said, and I think the takeaway there is that maybe not. Maybe we don't want to, maybe we don't. Now, I think that the chance of we want Messi are true. I think that I would love to see us take on the greatest player of all time, of our lifetime. And so, but tell you what, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Monterrey because we still have to beat Monterrey. So we'll talk about that. And then we'll tell you what we got wrong. So stay with us. We are back. All right, John. I guess tell the folks who are playing and when we're playing them.
Oh, well, we're gonna host Monterey this Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. because technically we're the western half of the bracket, even though we're only in the central time zone, so we got booted to a really late start time. But yes, 8:30 p.m. Tuesday, we will host Monterey, and then we are, at least from the rules, guaranteed to play another game. So the League's Cup final is on Saturday the 19th. There is also, according to the rules, it says a third place match in which that third CONCACAF Champions Cup place is up for grab. However, it does not specify on there, the bracket doesn't show it, and the schedule doesn't yet show it. So I don't know if it's also going to be on the 19th, or if maybe they put it on Friday, but that feels like kind of a quick turnaround time. So asterisk of, we are going to play another game. Now, the big thing to know about that is because of that, we will not be playing New England on the 20th. We are not going to play the New England game this Sunday, because we will either be playing Friday or Saturday. They basically said whoever qualifies for these last games will not be playing the regularly scheduled week 22 or 3 or whatever this is game. So we do know that the New England game should be moved. Not sure when. We'll cram it in on Wednesday, probably somewhere else. But we will be playing a game. We just aren't quite 100% sure of the date. And obviously, we don't know the opponent because we got to get through this game first.
Yeah. So let's talk about Monterey. Monterey is a mystery team to me. I don't know anything about them because I think that everyone who knows anything about North American soccer knows Club America. They know Cruz Azul. They know Chivas, right? But, I mean, Monterey, do you know anything about this club? Like, Toluca, I had to look up a bunch of stuff because I just didn't know about them. And it was interesting to learn about. Monterey, who are they and where are they at in the Mexican League right now?
They are another team that has some had some historical success. I think not as much recently, but they are one of the bigger and more consistent Liga MX teams.
Okay.
I will say I watched the first half, which is unfortunate, of the LAFC game, because that's when they went down 2-0 and they came back 3-0.
Yeah.
So I think that's, let's just talk about that. That, to me, that encapsulates it. LAFC came in on fire. They went up two goals.
I went to bed. Like you, I went to bed. I was like, LAFC's got
right,
this.
I went to bed.
I'm going to bed.
So maybe they coasted a little bit. Maybe they didn't take it seriously. But here's the thing that I think everyone's talked about, the Mexican teams, the Liga MX teams. Because they don't have the rosters, they have better depth. In other words, their second person, a lot of those people, is a higher quality, getting paid more money than our second. So in other words,
I see that.
You know,
I can see that.
And so I think, to me, that game illustrates it because they made, I think they made all five subs and sub players on and then got goals. So I think that shows that there's a danger in, even if we get up on a team like, even if anyone, LAFC, gets up on a team like that, they can continue pressing with quality, fresh legs, and it's not a step off. It's not like putting on Hawkinson for Hani because we don't have a number 10. You know what I mean? Like there's not that step down. So I think that's going to be one of the key differences. Is even if we play well 11-on-11 at the beginning, we have to be ready to go for a full 90. And as we've seen with all the teams, with Toluca, with all these, with Club America, they press. They throw a lot of numbers forward. We're going to have to be on point on
defense. Creative. They're very creative. Yes. Mexican teams are very creative with the ball. Yeah. They don't just play a static form of soccer.
No. But on that, so we know a little bit about what we're talking about. What is your prediction for our home game?
Yeah, there's too many variables, too many unknowns. Sorry, there are too many unknowns for me to really go out on a pick. My aspirational pick is a 3-2 victory. Obviously, my heart tells me I want a 3-2 victory with a Sam Surridge, extra time, stoppage time goal. That's what I want. I want a plus 7 minute Sam Surridge header from Dax McCarty, just a repeat from the Club America. Right? That's what I want.
Yeah.
So 3-2.
I think that's because I was going to go 2-1, but I think you're right. There will probably be more goals.
There's going to be goals.
I don't think
there is going to be goals in this game.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to shut them out, period. No. I don't think. I think they're going to get on the scoreboard.
No.
I would like us to win. I'd like it to be in regular time. I can honestly see this going to penalties, though. I really can. But because I'm going to go with the optimistic thing, I'm going to go with the 2-1 victory. I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go with the Messi and the Philly game has all the fireworks. Our game's kind of a little bit boring Gary ball, and we got to win. That's my speak it into the universe.
Do you think, question. Do you think, will Monterey's fans show up? Like Club America was 2/3 of our stadium during that match.
I think it'll be more like the Toluca game, but it might even be less than that because I think Monterey is a bigger team, but I mean, we've had 4 days, sorry, they'll have 3 total days to prepare. If any of their trans or fans are traveling, who knows? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how many local or nearby fans are really going to have to do that. So I would expect at best a showing similar to Toluca. But again, we had known about that for months, so it might not even be that high. And I know everyone I know has been hyping it up and trying to get people to go as Nashville fans and buy the tickets so that we don't let them have that kind of presence, but it will not be nearly the Club America level. No, it'll be more like the Toluca game at best.
People don't understand that Club America, I don't want to belabor the part, that they are the most popular soccer team in North America and South America. North and Central America. There are other teams in South America that are more
CONCACAF popular. In the CONCACAF area.
Yeah, in the CONCACAF region. Thank you. And my daughter was asking me why, because I was expressing concern about the Triple C game. Mm-hmm. And she was like, well, why wouldn't we want to play? And I was like, well, the travel is very different. It's not just to Mexico. It's to Trinidad and Tobago. It's to Venezuela. It's to Honduras. And she's like, because she doesn't understand. CONCACAF is that whole region. And it's, you know, then you're playing, you're playing in hostile stadiums that are fairly hostile. And you've got no fan, like you got no chance to have any fans in the stand for you. So, it's a different. So I think 3-2. All right. I am going to go. I have my ticket. I'm going to go solo on the Tuesday night game. So we'll see. I don't know if this means anything, but I wasn't able to get the same ticket I had last time. So right on the front row, row A of the 218. Yeah. So I don't know. It may mean there are going to be more people there. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
What did we get wrong from last week?
I didn't have a whole lot other than I did want to mention in our VAR, we talked a little bit about the Club America stuff. Mm-hmm. We did not mention, as far as I could tell, we did not mention throwing things on the pitch, which is always a get off my pitch. I know it should go without stating. We didn't mention it, but please get off my pitch. Don't throw stuff on the pitch. Don't invade the pitch. We talked about pitch invaders a little bit. We didn't talk about the throwing things. There were videos. They even threw stuff at their own team when they left. Just don't. It goes without saying, but I'm going to VAR it. Put the comp in here. Stop throwing things in the pitch, please. Everybody, just everywhere, just don't.
Yeah, they had a. There was two lectures during the pregame match of like sportsmanship and like you know, fair play and what would happen to you
with the Minnesota game.
Yeah, and it was during the Minnesota game, and my daughter was like, "What is this?" I'm like, "It's so hard to explain."
But I will end, since that, I will end and share a fun note that I'm sure you'll also hear about on the NSC soundcheck this week, which is Bakay DiBiase, who is a Minnesota player defender who subbed in. It was his birthday. And so the croc block serenaded him when he was warming up for a sub with a birthday thing. And he came back after the game and gave one of them his jersey.
I saw that.
Shout out to him. For first of all, being a class guy, appreciating the birthday wishes, even though it was clearly a depressing thing. And again, that is an expression of good fandom. Yes, we gave them crap. We were up 5-0. They sang the guy happy birthday. He appreciated it. That's good stuff. Like, that's why – that's the thing. When you don't take it to that level of seriousness of wanting to throw things, I mean, then you can enjoy moments like that. And so shout out to some of our fans for doing that. Shout out to him for being a class guy. And that is an example of the things we would like to do, you know, when interacting with opposing players and not, you know, throw things at them like certain other fan clubs.
Club America is they're the like the Yankees of Mexican soccer. They're the oldest. They're the most story. I don't know. They're just, it's a different fan base.
But anyway, but I will say their fans are fun on Twitter because we've embraced the rat meme. Evidently, Nashville SC are the rat kings now, and we're all embracing it. And so we're just going to rat our way to the finals.
We're like Leeds. Like, no one likes us, and we don't care. I'll tell you what, one thing, and I wanted to save this for the end. So Forrest played Arsenal, who I know from, I have a very good account that Soccer Moses is a avid Arsenal fan. So I'm getting my hair cut next week, and so I'll be talking to my source who knows Soccer Moses, and so I may have lost a bet. No, I'm kidding. But in that match, their central striker that remained at North Central the central striker for Nottingham Forest is a young man named Brennan Johnson, 25 years old. Just a wonderful striker, missed a sitter right there in the first half that would have tied the game. I'm just saying that a lot of Forest fans commented in some of the comments I posted, some of them said, we kind of wish we hadn't got rid of Sam. I'm like, now, obviously, Brennan Johnson is an incredible striker. Mm. He is, and in all fairness to Sam, he is a better striker than Sam. But I just wanted to put that out there that the Forest fans have told me on account that they do miss Sam and that they've given him
a good home and he's clearly thriving so far.
But in that same vein of good sportsmanship, I have only received compliments and good wishes from Nottingham Forest saying, mm-hmm. you know, we are glad that Sam went to your club and we are so pleased to see him scoring goals.
Yeah.
You know, in his first two goals in his first two games. So people across the pond are watching. They are watching these matches. So
here's a fun bonus stat. He is now one goal away from totaling all of Ake Loba's goal contributions in his entire time here.
Okay, so
we could see that.
Well, let's end on this. Do you think Sam gets another goal in the Monterrey match?
Yes.
Okay, I do too. Okay, on that note, thank you at home for listening. Thank you overseas for listening. John, thank you. I will talk to you next Sunday, and hopefully we will be talking about...
Or before if we need another emergency podcast.
There may be an emergency pod depending on the outcome of Tuesday night. So stay with us, folks. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Bye.